Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Mellis Roberts Mouse, here's a voice I want you to listen to. I mean, it'll be my voice, but the voice within it is from something I want you to hear, from something that I'm quoting. Just listen to this. As a child, I lived in trees. The giant ash tree rising well over 100 feet in my backyard was the center of my world. Down the hill, in a grove of pines, I played in pine needles, sometimes clinging to the tippy top of a tree, arms wrapped around the thin tip, the weight of my body gently swaying me from side to side. Before anyone taught me otherwise, I sensed trees had feelings and inner lives. I knew they were living beings with whom to relate. Whenever I was in the trees, I sensed they understood me. As a child, I turned to the smell of pine and bark instead of human skin or voice when I hurt. I climbed into the branches of the trees to be held again and again. I trusted their love and wisdom. They nurtured me. Now, the voice that I'm quoting, my voice, is that of Rebecca Wildbear. Yes, you heard that right. Wildbear, she chose her name. We'll get to that story and her relationship with bears in a moment. She's many things. She's been a wilderness therapist. She leads retreats, wild yoga, they're called, and nature and soul programs through the Animas Valley Institute. She's been the elementary school counselor. And her book, her wonderful book, which I have in my hand, is called Wild Yoga, and the subtitle is A Practice of Initiation, Veneration, and Advocacy for the Earth. As you can feel already, she is passionate, she is poetic, she listens to trees, and she is a dreamer. She's also been doing my training for teachers of active dreaming, and we are honored to have her. And I'm honored and delighted to have you as a guest on Valentine's Day, Rebecca, which is also, I gather, your pub date, your publication day. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, today is the day my book is officially out. Happy Valentine's Day.
Well, happy Valentine. I think things are all lined up for you karmically for this book, which, as I say, is passionate. Let's get right to it. You say, well, I've quoted enough of you already for people to feel your connections with trees and with the earth and also with your childhood self. You say early in the book, welcome your ferocity and listen to your dream, and that the core of wild yoga is the capacity to feel the earth's body as an extension of our own, the sense that we reside within her. So tell us what this is. What is wild yoga as you teach and practice it, and what is this lifelong connection of veneration and advocacy for the earth that you're inviting us to join?
Thank you, Robert. I'm so glad you read that passage about trees and my childhood connection. Wild yoga is very much rooted in my childhood connection with nature, the connection that was inherent before I was taught anything different, that knew that I was connected. In fact, in many ways, trees, I think of trees as having parented me. I ran to their branches when I needed consoling. I talked to them. I played in them. And wild yoga kind of takes us back as a human race to a time when we were really connected and felt that inherent connection with nature. And it was part of everything that we did, from practicalities of everyday life to the way we considered living, to our spirituality, to our soul's life. And so wild yoga takes us back to a primal sense of yoga, which if you research the origins of yoga and even the names of poses, they took you back to animal nature, kind of humans trying to get into their bodies in a way so that they could feel themselves as both an animal, a wild being, and also that they weren't in isolation or separate, that they were actually rooted and connected and could listen to the earth. And I know that in our culture, a lot of times yoga is synonymous with yoga asana, meaning the practice of how we move our bodies. And in my book, Wild Yoga, I bring us back to a sense of yoga, a much larger perspective of yoga, which has to do with our relationship with our own bodies and our relationship with everything around us. And to me, the biggest thing that is around us, or the biggest connection in the material world, is the ones that's to the planet. So in my book, a central focus of bringing us back is rooting us in our bodies. I mean, that's the first two chapters, virtually rooting in the intelligence of our bodies and deepening our ecological perception, and everything else kind of comes from basing ourselves in this wild and primal inherent connection.
You write beautifully, Rebecca. I mean, I appreciate that as someone who values good writing and can't stand mediocre writing, particularly when it comes to spiritual subjects. You write very well. You write in a sensory way. There's muscle and sinew. There's blood and bone. And I'm just thinking about your description of the gorge. I guess it's the Colorado River. You're on one of your fasting retreats, and there's a guy on the other side of the gorge, and you're slightly concerned about each other's survival capacity, and you'll add a stone to a cairn on either side to signal each other that you're still in the world and still with us and still around with the earth. Reading you, I mean, I think this will be effect on your readers too. I mean, reading you, I would have gusts of memory from childhood, the smell of the she oaks, the casuarina trees in a sun shower in Queensland, Australia when I was a kid. I'd have memories of connection with the earth in North America, where I've lived for a long while, of being in the Guadalupe River Valley and lying under a tree and finding myself in connection with a man who was more like a jackrabbit living long ago than like a human as we understand them today, feeling the spirits of the earth. So you bring us all of our senses quiveringly alive. I mean, for those who are more familiar with, say, Hatha yoga and the asanas and so on, you give us a yoga asana, you give us a posture with a very good description at the end of each chapter. But for me, what is riveting is this embodied relationship with the earth that you have. And it's also a relationship with dreams. I mean, you're recalling us to the world of dreams as well as to the world of nature. Let's talk about that a little bit, because this is something that we have vividly in common. Let's talk about your relationship with dreams. I remember several dreams you report in Wild Yoga, the book. One of them is a dream in which you're on your way to be married, and you were married at some point. But as I gather, this wasn't about a marriage in the ordinary sense. It was somehow about marrying the earth. Tell us about the role of dreams in your life and some of those turning point dreams.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Dreams are very primary, as you know, from all the books you've written on that topic. And to me, they're very connected to the wild. It's like dreams are the wilderness of our psyches. And so we can be out on the land during the day, my two favorite things, and at night it's being attuning to the wild images and stories that come up from the depths of our psyches. And of course, when we're mixing those two, wandering in nature and dreams, there's often a very deep relationship and connection between what's happening in the waking world and what's happening in our sleeping world. That can be true even not in nature, but to me it seems to happen even more often to that synchronistic connection when I'm also in nature. But yeah, dreams have been primary my whole life. As a youngster, I didn't really know, I didn't have any formal training, so I didn't really know what they mean, but I did know I was fascinated by them, and I would write them down, and I would talk about them. I didn't know much what to do with them. I had a dream dictionary, because that's what you knew to do in mainstream culture, and I would try to, you know, read about what they might mean and see. Of course, I didn't really get too far, but I did, you could say, kind of honor them, and just in the fact that I would be remembering them and telling them and writing them. And then my formal training with DreamWork began at Animas Valley Institute, where I remember going to the very first program and telling a dream out loud and working it. It's the one that I wrote about in my book about the young, wild girl that was in the trash can that I ended up going out on the land that day and taking out of the trash can and washing her off and seeing where she wanted to go. And it just so happened she was very, you know, connected to my own primal connection to nature and the land. So that getting to know her and wandering with her and interacting with her and seeing what she wanted and where she wanted to go reestablished my connection to the natural world. That was in when I was 29. At a time when I probably was working very hard and a little less connected. I still, you know, did all the outdoor things, but I mean, in a very intimate and personal way, I wasn't as connected. And she really helped me reconnect. And ever since then, 29, for the rest of my life, I have continued to really deeply listen to dreams and also study various other ways of working with dreams and different models and modalities, but mostly interested not in analyzing them, but in listening to them, like I might listen to the trees or the river, like they're a wild being that has intelligence, probably intelligence far, far greater than my own mind, you know, and my own understanding, and that listening to them would guide me places. And I would say in general that they have since then. My life is, you know, probably completely different than it would have been if I wasn't listening to dreams, starting with that young girl and so many other images. And you spoke about the marriage dream, which I think happened around the time I was 32, just about to turn 33. And I was actually married at that time and strangely marrying my heart in that quest experience. Was the unraveling of my outer world marriage, because a deeper psychic marriage had happened that needed to that I needed to honor first, and I didn't know. The dream just told me I was getting married, and I reenacted the dream, you know, on the land on my quest. I dressed, I bathed, I got ready for the ceremony, and I didn't know, you know, the dream didn't tell me right away who I was to marry, just that I was to marry. And while I was out on the earth listening, that's when, and asking the question, who am I marrying anyway, that the answer came through in various different ways. I think that I talk about with the rocks showing up and some of the different other images that came.
You advise people when it comes to dreaming to do some things that I heartily endorse. I mean, you advise people to stay with the dream, listen to the dream, find ways to honor and celebrate the dream creatively, and go back into the dream, re-enter the dream when appropriate to get more information, to resolve something, which of course is one of the core techniques of the approach I call active dreaming. Let's talk about your relationship with the bear and your bear dreams, Rebecca. You say that you dreamed of the bear early in life. Bear is in your name. You had wooden bears instead of plastic Barbie and Ken on your wedding cake for your literal wedding, according to your book. I love that image. Let me just say, by way of introduction, I mean, you also talk about experiences in Costa Rica, where I've also traveled and taught, by the way, and feeling in that rather hot rainforesty environment that where bears, ordinary bears, don't, I think, exist, that you're somehow as hairy as a bear in the wrong climate. You know, I'm Australian. We don't have native bears in Australia, but when I started living in North America, I dreamed again and again of a huge, gigantic wild bear, which was in my space, in my room, in my bedroom, bigger than could possibly fit there in literal terms. And although it wasn't attacking me, it was so much bigger than me that I was terrified. Eventually, we're talking 35 plus years ago, I found the courage to go back into the dream, just sitting in an easy chair in the semi-dark, and met the bear and cut it short. Once I braved up to my fear, the bear embraced me. We became the same size. The bear showed me we were joined at the heart and invited me to call on the bear for healing and guidance, which I've done ever since. So you've lived with the bear, and it's even in your name, for all this time in dreams. I think you've had some encounters in nature. Tell us what the bear is for you. I noticed, and I'm noting this partly because you're such a fierce and effective advocate for feral, ferocious femininity, etc. You call the bear she at one point and he later on in the book. I mean, there's no problem there, except I just noticed there's a sort of change in pronouns. So talk to us about your relationship with the bear. In my case, when I first met the giant bear, I called it he, but later on I realized I was dealing with the great mama bear, so my primary pronoun now is always she.
Yeah, that's great. I think I sometimes switch back and forth, even with trees, he and she, and because I kind of experience both genders in the trees and even in bear when I'm with him, but it did sort of switch. Later, I definitely felt it more. In the beginning, I felt it more as a he. I mean, the connection felt romantic, you know, somewhat. I mean, not sexual, but just romantic. So there was a, to me, like ferocity and strength had a very masculine energy to it. And the bear, the masculine bear, even more than mama bear, felt like somehow very tough. And in some of the dreams, it was also a baby bear. You know, I had multiple dreams with bears, and it bears and trees together, actually, quite a lot. And I didn't know, you know, I love bears, and I kind of longed to be a part of their clan. And like I said, in my book, my husband and I imagined ourselves as a family of bears. You know, we felt very bear-like and connected to them. And I was having these different dreams, but I didn't quite... I still didn't quite glean my deeper connection to them. I loved when they showed up, and I loved getting to know them. I loved their primal power and their connection to the earth. And I had one dream that really started to work me, and it was a dream where a bear charged me and went right past my left arm, and I could feel the power, and this was, I had thought, a masculine he-bear, and it brushed right past my left arm, and so I worked with that dream quite a bit, and just getting to feel the physical contact. Of course, I was terrified when it was charging me, but then when I worked with just feeling the contact of it, of its body against my left arm, I could feel its tremendous, wild power. And that dream in particular helped me start to just feel the power in bear, and also my connection. It was next to a river. There's water connected in my mythic image as well as trees and bear. They're all always sort of present in different versions. And, still I didn't really know, that I was the bear. I just felt like bear was a guide who showed up to me in times of dreams and showed me about power, he's a good one to hang out with, for me when I want to think of power and what, you know, a being has. And it wasn't until I was in Costa Rica that I started to, really feel I had a very odd experience that I, you know, never quite had before, where it was, Costa Rica was a place I went every winter. I love the warmth, and I didn't much, feel bear. There's actually a peninsula in Costa Rica called the Osa Peninsula, but I didn't much feel that connection, but I was asking for ferocity, and I felt a lot of ferocity in Costa Rica itself, in the rainforest, and the jaguars that live there, and the snakes that live there, and the spider, you know, so I felt like it was a fierce ecosystem, but I didn't much feel bear's presence. And so when I was on a quest, though, spending the night, and I was asking for ferocity, what came is an image of a bear to me, back to me, and it came beyond that night and beyond that dream, in that I was living in Costa Rica and doing yoga, which is very, you know, doing yoga every day and walking in the wild every day, and that environment to me is very, like, I feel very in my body and body-centered, and so it's as if my body started to have a dream, like a waking dream all the time, and I started to feel as if I was the bear itself. And, you know, this was an odd feeling because as a woman doing yoga, that's not something I was going for. You know, I was going for, you know, feeling, you know, my human body as a woman and and you know, the warmth and the pleasure, and instead I felt like this big furry, you know, bear that, and I was actually dreaming of being back in Colorado, which had never happened to me before because I don't really like the snow, you know, and the cold too much. But the bear did. The bear was longing to be hibernating in the winter, and so it was the visceral body experiences that I was having day in and day out that particular winter when I was asking the questions about ferocity and trying to learn from the rainforest's ferocity were leading me back to bear, the bear that was in my body, and I began to understand that the bear wanted to be honored in me, not only as my guide, but also as in me. And as I began after that to study more about bears and especially female bears and women bears that protect their cubs and also my own female body, I began to realize that in many ways the bear that I was really referring to is a feminine energy. And as I also began to study about women protectors of the earth, I began to recognize that the ferocity that I was looking for was actually a feminine kind of ferocity that's a very protective energy. It's not meant to be aggressive.
All right. Rebecca. We have to take a break. We're listening to Rebecca Wild Bear, living up to her name, as she talks about the strength and the ferocity of Great Mother Bear. We're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Gingivitis, gum disease, words you don't want in your mouth. But according to the American Dental Association, 3 out of every 4 adults will develop gum disease. Now there's an all-natural way to fight back. Introducing the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies. Developed by a dentist and clinically tested by a leading university, the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies daily oral rinse and toothpaste was proven to kill the germs that cause gum disease better than the leading brands. Regular use was proven to reduce gingivitis and bleeding gums. The Natural Dentist contains herbs like echinacea and aloe vera and has no alcohol or sugar or harsh chemicals. The Natural Dentist is guaranteed to work or your money back. You can find the Natural Dentist at most drug and health stores, including Trader Joe's, Save-On, Walgreens, and Long's Drug Stores, as well as most health stores, including Whole Foods Markets and Wild Oats. Call 800-615-6895 or visit www.thenaturaldentist.com for more info.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. This is getting really wild, which is wonderful. My wonderful guest is Rebecca Wild Bear. Her book is Wild Yoga. Publisher is one of my favorites, New World Library. You can find I've published quite a few books with them. Her website is like her name, RebeccaWildBear.com. RebeccaWildBear.com. And by the way, hop over to MossDreams.com, my website, and I'm still really offering only online programs, but they're pretty interesting. We're about to expand the list, and you'll get all sorts of other goodies. So, we're talking about the bear in Rebecca's dreams, Wat Okwari, that's the Mohawk, Kanyenka word for bear, she-bear. stands for. By the way, Rebecca, in the Iroquoian languages like Mohawk, the primary noun or pronoun is always seen female. This would suit you, and it suits me too, though I'm just a man. So if you say bear in Mohawk, you're saying she bear. The primary form is female. So if you're invoking the bear, as we often do in my workshops, as you know, with a song of the bear, which traces from that tradition, you're calling the power of Great Mother Bear, with which we can do so much. I've seen soul recovery take place just almost instantly by somebody connecting with Great Mother Bear and then meeting her lost or frightened or hiding child self and wrapping her own arms and that of Great Mother Bear around the child who trusts the bear, even when it doesn't trust the human. Very quickly, in honor of the stories you're sharing with us, I've had many, many dream visionary shamanic encounters with the bear, and I know what it means to bring the bear into a yoga situation, because long ago I used to teach at the famous Kripalu Yoga Center. Now, I was the first shamanic practitioner they told me they had ever invited, and when the bear and the tiger came to Kripalu, it was interesting. But I remember many years ago when I was having some very serious symptoms, I dreamed that I spent four nights in the arm, within the elbow, within the kind of Indian death lock of a Great Mother Bear. She was holding my neck in the crook of her arm, inside her elbow, for 4 days and nights. And as I surfaced from the dream, I said, and wrote it down, I said to the bear, "You are Artemis, I am Osiris," and I felt that I had, it wasn't some ego trip, I felt I had been reborn in that night of this incredibly deep and initially terrifying healing. I mean, being almost smothered, suffocated, garrotted in the immense strength of the bear, and yet the healing came through. So bear is fierce in order to heal and protect, as we both know. Now, one of your chapters in the book Wild Yoga is about courting the muse, and it uses a phrase like that, and I think this is a very good idea. So tell us what courting the muse means to you in your life and in what you're recommending that all of us might do.
Courting the muse is, the muse to me, again, my book is all about all the intelligences that are more intelligent than us, because I would imagine, I imagine a life lived where we're connecting to these greater forces, intelligences that direct us is going to be way more interesting and intelligent, in the course of actions to take and creativity to take than just our lonely mind by itself, human mind. So the muse is another intelligent life force to have a relationship with. And to me, that the muse is like there's like a romance to it. There's like a creative romance energy. That's some kind of romance of the imagination. And it's like courting this romance involves a sense of feeling where you're kind of turned on, so to speak. Like there's a charge of excitement and energy and passion, like what truly interests you in your heart, in your body, in your imaginally, and even in your mind, like in your intelligence, what ideas, what possibilities excite you. And you're courting the muse, there's things that show up. You can actually just go out with that question, like, what is really interesting right now? What's the thread I'm supposed to follow? What's, where am I being directed? Where's the creative energy? Where's the romance in my life? And, that can be questions in the dreams. That can be questions in the wanders. But sometimes it just shows up even without asking those questions. It can show up in particular dreams you have. It can show up in conversations you have on the land. It can also show up in romantic attractions you have to other humans. And again, it doesn't have to be about having a relationship with them sexually or romantically. It just shows up by your enthusiasm and excitement to, like a desire to want to be closer or have a conversation or have a connection, share ideas. And so, in fact, sometimes I think that's a way more interesting thing to do with our charges and our interests with other humans instead of, try to have a relationship that's a particular kind of a relationship, a romantic partnership, which often turns up going in a direction of, we find out that our charges or our projections weren't what we thought they were, or this is a completely different person. And that's too great to have a relationship with a human and get to know who they really are. But these charges that we have are also interesting to follow, because it's kind of about our muse and our creativity and our inner romance and our guide of where we're being called to go and what we're being called to create. And it makes creating fun. I mean, I can tell you honestly, I've been a wilderness guide most of my life and love being in my body. So sitting in front of a computer writing a book, you know, physically wasn't at the top of my list because it's a lot of time typing on the computer. My muse was with me the whole time I was doing it, and my muse was excited by what I was writing. And so it's strangely enough, writing at the computer became the absolute most interesting thing I wanted to do every day. And the things that I had wanted to do before, like just be outside, wandering, you know, were kind of lesser of interest, because the most interesting thing to do for me is to follow what the muse wants, because there's a kind of excitement and a creativity that follows. So, yeah, that's a little bit about the muse.
That's very interesting. It is fascinating, you know, what courting the muse means to different people. My favorite book amongst all the books I read last year is a family memoir by this wonderful young Colombian-American writer, Imelda Rojas Contreras, the man who could move clouds, story of her family as a family of dreamers. And she said in an interview after the book came out that in order to court her muse, I don't think she used quite that phrase, but that's what she's talking about, she puts on a garment, a slip, a robe, a dress of a certain shade of blue. She has a closet full of garments of this particular shade of blue, ultramarine. It's I think it's a dark blue. And that pleases her muse. So she's got a writing garment. I mean, some writers do that. They have a writing garment. Actually, maybe not a bad idea. Lord Dunsany, the famous English Anglo-Irish author of wonderful visionary tales, he used to sit on an old hat. Sit on an old hat. That's how he courted his muse as a writer. You write, I'm looking at your chapter on courting the muse, about this gentle erotic. We're not talking about physical eros. You're talking about eros in a more generous sense, which you write about beautifully. You're talking about what goes on when you write. Sometimes when I write, I feel turned on. My muse is excited when I show up and write. Sometimes I sense him smiling or kissing or caressing me as I type. Isn't that wonderful for someone who, as you said, is habituated to talking to the juniper? My God, your love affair with the juniper in the book is really the sexiest thing there. I love it. I like junipers. But there you are. You feel your muse close, stroking, caressing, approving as you sit and write. We have to take a break. It seems unfair, but we do. That's the way things go. Our wonderful guest is Rebecca Wildbear. Her new book is Wild Yoga, and this is Where the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back after a couple of minutes of break.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com.
That's mossdreams.com. MossDreams.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
We are back. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Rebecca Wild Bear. Her book is Wild Yoga, published by New World Library, who have also brought out, I've lost count, I mean, at least six or seven of my books. The most recent was called Growing Big Dreams. Go over to my website, mossdreams.com, and take a look. Go to Rebecca's website, RebeccaWildBear.com. She leads really fascinating retreats. She's been a wilderness guide and therapist for many years. She knows her stuff. She can lead you on a memorable, life-changing adventure. And she's all about soul, not only growing our soul, our human individual soul, but listening to the soul of the world, listening to the soul of the earth. I have to ask you, Rebecca, we talked about your relationship with trees in general, and I quoted trees that have been important to you early in life, like the ash and like the pine and so on. I was very struck by how romantically and erotically you write about your relationship with the juniper. It comes up several times in the book. And some of our people will know the juniper well, some not so well, but tell us about your relationship with the juniper.
Yeah, well, that came through dreams too, Robert. Certainly wouldn't start out having an erotic connection, you know, necessarily. I would have had many protective parts of like, oh, that's crazy, you know, you don't do that. It actually started out from a dream that I had. Probably a lot I could say about this guy. Could probably write a whole book on this topic, although it's such an intimate topic that I just included a very little bit in the book. But I was having a dream where there was a charge between me and a masculine figure, I was looking at him and he was looking at me, and I think he said something like, "I want you and I know you want me too." And this was in my early 30s. And I would say that probably my erotic nature wasn't completely, awake, you know, like enlivened on board. You know, in human connections and in the way sexuality is taught and the limitations to what erotic nature is taught in our culture were certainly not, it was not, it didn't make me aware of all the possibilities by a long shot. And so I was wandering on the land with this dream, trying to follow the energy of what it was telling me, repeating what was said in the dream, and I wandered at night in the dark. And suddenly I found myself with actually, at that time it wasn't a juniper tree, but it was a ponderosa pine in Colorado, which I still had a very deep relationship with, as you know, from when I wrote about the ponderosa pines in the tree chapter, and I love their smell and scent. And I ended up that I was having a connection with the tree, which I had had for many years, talking to trees, being with trees, climbing trees. But suddenly this connection that stemmed from the dream time in the night was actually creating an erotic connection in my body. And it was surprising, which often is, as you know, when we work with dreams in nature. I certainly wasn't expecting it. But the smell and the night and the dream energy coming in, I was actually feeling turned on, you know, physically, sexually. And was having an encounter with the tree and was, you know, following the energy and the connection that was coming from the dream. But again, it was kind of an amazing experience, but I also, you know, didn't quite know what to do with it. So I shared it with some people and that didn't understand about connections with nature. And I also had a lot of, you know, protective parts or fear parts in me, but like, well, that's really strange. I doubt I'll ever do that again. But I continued to have more dreams, and over the next 6 months, and I lived in Utah at the time next to a juniper pinyon pine forest that had no trails. It was like a land that was just wild with no trails where people walked. You could just walk out there and you would never see anyone anytime. And I ended up having a special relationship with a particular juniper tree out there. It was half dead and half alive, very old, very big. And I would talk to it every day. But after one dream, about 6 months later, after that first experience, I ended up doing a ceremony with the tree. It was a dream where I had stolen some magic potatoes from a girl in my dream, and I ended up getting to know that woman who I stole the magic potatoes from, and getting some potatoes and offering them back in the ceremony with the juniper. And suddenly, after I did that ceremony, as you know, when you do ceremony, you're just surprised by what happens. And this juniper, which I had already relating to and talking to quite a bit, and we had a good relationship. I brought it gifts all the time. But we ended up having an erotic connection with the tree. Again, I was, you know, turned on. And it was very unusual because it was November, and I was wearing Carhartt overalls, I remember, and there was snow on the ground. So it's not the time or place that I would normally have think. Like, you know, Costa Rica with the warmth and the tropics is definitely a place that sort of naturally feels erotic. But so this was, again, surprising. But that's, you know, the way the dream has of surprising us and showing us that, you know, erotic isn't always what we think it is. And it has more to do with the energy that's happening in the tree and the ground and the energy that exists in my own body. But I ended up having a long-term relationship with this particular tree, which was only about half a mile or so from my house, but it was, like I said, way off any trail, never encountered anybody. And I had already had a relationship with this tree where I visited it, felt held and talked to it and felt gifts, but now the relationship shifted to a different way, a relationship where I was beginning to wake up to my own erotic nature in a way that I never had, in a way that culture had never taught me existed. And it was amazing and wonderful. I was in my early 30s.
I wonder if you realize just how mythic you are. You sound like a Colorado version of Ovid's Metamorphoses, where the author begins by saying, my purpose is to show how bodies change into different forms and where humans change into trees. And everything is alive. And one thing changes into another thing, and the relationship is erotic in the generous sense that you use the word. It's completely mythic stuff, Rebecca. Here you are talking about Colorado, wherever exactly the juniper pinyon copse or wood is, and it evokes the relationship of our ancestors with the animate world around us. I mean, you are in favor of an animist approach to the world, understanding everything is alive and conscious. So am I. But the way you just told it, it's straight out of one of the mythic tales of shapeshifting, in which a major theme, once again, is that humans can turn into trees, and the trees have their own spirits. And it's also always interesting looking at a tree to try to discern whether you're dealing with the spirit of the tree, if it's alive to you, or the spirit of a human or something else that is with and in that tree, using it as a shelter, which is another subject to look at sometime. Anyway, thank you for your relations, for talking so openly and unguardedly about your relationship with the juniper. I dreamed of a juniper, of you using juniper wood, juniper berries and juniper wood with two other elements in making incense, which was more than incense. It was a sort of smoke screen through which you could see, which sounds, you know, it sounds idiotic, but it was like a screen for vision. I dreamed of this, and then we did it in a ceremony. And it was interesting effects. The smoke was actually a vehicle for materialization, as well as a vehicle for vision in a strange way. And then many years later, I was in Estonia, where they value the juniper tree very, very highly. And people, wood witches in Estonia, showed me how they use the berries and wood of the juniper to make smoke in exactly the same way. So it's interesting how what comes to us in dreams can play, sometimes over several cycles, several sequences, into the physical world. So the dreams and the physical manifestation and the proliferation of synchronicity is all connected. Good stuff. I'm going to give you something to think about, Rebecca, for our last segment. We've only got one 8-minute segment left. You advise us throughout your wonderful book to nurture our consciousness or shift our imagination to embrace the tree, the stone, something in the world around us, to imagine ourselves being with it and seeing things from its perspective. I'd love you to lead a little meditation or visualization exercise when we come back to give people a taste for how, you know, you might guide them to do those things. I know you might be rather doing it amongst the rocks and the trees and the raccoons and the squirrels in nature. But would you do that for us? Would you guide us on a meditation or visualization to help us shift consciousness to something in the world around us? Great. All right, we've got a plan. We're talking to Rebecca Wild there, author of Wild Yoga. We'll be back. Get ready. She's going to guide us on a simple visualization quest.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978. Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You are listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. If you've heard what has gone before, you'll be delighted to hear that Rebecca Wildbear, author of Wild Yoga, is about to lead us on some kind of short vision quest, perhaps to put us in touch with part of the animate world around us. Over to you, Rebecca.
Great. Well, to do this, to go into our deep imagination and connect with the natural world, it might be good to just take a moment to lie back or get someplace comfortable where you can listen and close your eyes and just rest your body. And just take some deep breaths and feel yourself in your body, in your imagination. And allow yourself to, as you're inside yourself, just breathing, imagine yourself in a wild place or with a wild being that's been significant in your life. It could be a place that you played as a child, trees or land that you played with, particular places that you played outside in nature as a child, or it might be some place that you is important to you, or you have been a relationship at some point in your life as an adult. Could be even recently, or could be long ago. Don't think about it too much, but just fall kind of into your body and breathe, and just ask for a place in nature that's important to you, a place where you have a primal connection. Just ask for that place to show up and see where you end up, see what comes up when you just ask to connect to a place in nature that's really important to you. Maybe you'll even be surprised by which place you end up. And once you're there, wherever it is, let yourself wander around and have some tactile contact with the place. You might notice the quality of light or the time of day. You might notice the texture of the ground. Is it dirt? Is it sand? Is it soil? Is it grass? Is there water nearby? And you might also notice the sound you hear. Do you hear water? Do you hear wind? So let yourself have a full-bodied experience of this place. If you're around trees, you might be contacting the bark. If you're in grasses, you might be running your hands through the waves of grasses. If you feel the wind, you might feel that on your skin. Just let yourself go and just let yourself have a full experience in this place, tactilely, physically with your body. Just noticing your primal connection and noticing how nature and your imagination can come together to remind you of your primal connection and your most important places that you know that you've been on the land. And as you take a moment there in this place to allow your body to be there, to allow your physical presence to feel what it's like, to remember viscerally what it's like to be there, you might ask this place if it has anything in particular it wants you to remember. Might be about a past moment that you've had with this place, or it might not be. It might be about something completely different. Just ask this place if there's anything it wants you to remember or experience. Allow the place and the beings here or the being here to guide you, to lead you, letting them and their interests be more important than whatever agenda you might have. And just listen and see if there's anything they want to show you. And if there's anything they're inviting you to, a place or something to focus on particularly or an experience to have, just allow that to happen. Let yourself follow their direction. And let yourself feel your connection to this place and what happens when you allow yourself to listen to nature. And when you sense that you can listen to nature in your imagination, wherever you are, by remembering any connection you've ever had with nature or any moment or relationship you've ever had with any wild place or being in your whole life. Remembering how wherever you are, you can call that connection back and you can listen to those others and see if there's any way they're directing you. If it doesn't make sense, perfect. That's okay. You're probably on to something. If it's a surprise, same thing, you're probably on to something. Just allowing whatever wants to happen, taking one more moment here, maybe looking around at this other, making contact, and just seeing if there's anything else they want to show you. Anything else they want you to experience or see or remember. And finally, just take a moment to offer gratitude for whatever happened, whether you understand it or you don't, whether it immediately fed you or it's still quite mysterious. Just offering gratitude in whatever way you want, words or presence. And maybe making any intentions to return again, because you can always return to these places and spend more time. And then allowing yourself to find your way back into the present, into this place, into whatever room or place you find yourself, and knowing that you still can feel that connection, it's still with you, and you can return to it again anytime you like. Thank you.
That was very nice, Rebecca. Thank you. I felt gratitude for the land that I revisited, and to my astonishment and humbling, I felt gratitude from the land because I realized to a deeper extent I had actually succeeded in serving as custodian for that land. I actually prevented it from being subdivided and developed, and it stayed as it is. Today that land is been part of it, an equine rescue center, and part of it it's still wild woods. And that was the effect of my ownership for a few years and the way that I set things up so that it could not be divided and developed, and I felt the gratitude of the land. I hadn't realized. So I feel humbled almost to the point of tears, and I felt the sensory, physical-like sensations of being by those little waterfalls in the woods. And seeing the great blue heron that failed to fly south one winter and connecting with that, and seeing the red fox, the quick red fox, and inventorying more of the trees than I thought about. So thank you, that worked very well. So we just had an exercise led by Rebecca Wildbear, who encourages us to realize, to wake up and realize that the earth around us is animate. It is conscious, it needs advocates, and it needs those who can commune with it. Communicate with it as she has done all her life, deeply. One quick thought, Rebecca, it's a very deep subject and we're running out of time, but part of your story is what we might summarize the gift in the wound. You went really through a life-threatening, harrowing experience involving a tumor next to your heart when you were, 21 years old, approaching graduation. And yet emerged from that with all that you have to give and all the passion for life that you have. Do you see the gift in the wound looking back at that?
Definitely. Conversation with death took me to a place of finding out what matters, who I am. I mean, it altered me, as I mentioned in my book, irrevocably. I think it was one of my first contacts with soul and deeper connections with the sacred of life that lived in my own body as well as in the outer world. And the things that I had been focusing on began to shift completely, and the way I oriented my life changed radically. So I definitely think so. And I also want to just say thanks so much for sharing your story, Robert, about your journey that happened in your imagination with the land. I am very passionate, too, about protecting wild places and the relationship between our own relationship with wild places and how that can lead to their protection. So it was a great story to hear how you were remembering a place you were connected to that was also a place that, because of that connection, you were able to protect. Wonderful.
Well, thank you for opening the doorway. We've been talking to Rebecca Wildbear. Her book is Wild Yoga. We'll be back for a moment after the break, really just to say thank you and dream on.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course.
Well, we've had the great pleasure of sharing the wild passion for the earth and for living in harmony with the earth. Rebecca Wildbear, her book is Wild Yoga. Thank you so much for all you've shared with us, Rebecca.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your great stories and questions.
Well, may the bear continue to dance for you and with you, and may your informed wildness continue to inspire others. From now until next time, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.